Welcome to this AAT podcast on the preparation and submission of P11Ds for 2007-08. Another tax year has ended, and with most employers having already submitted their pay-as-you-earn end-of-year returns, we should perhaps now turn our attention to the annual statutory P11D returns. This is about reporting those expense payments and benefits in kind, reimbursed, paid on behalf of, or provided to any director, and to any director or employee earning at a rate of £8,500 per annum. The statutory filing date for Forms P11D, P9D, and the very important P11DB Return of Class 1A National Insurance Contributions is due by the 6th of July 2008, and that falls on a Sunday this year, when I suspect most HMRC offices will not be open to receive our last-minute submissions. Having said that, the most important P11D deadline, in my view, is the 19th of July 2008, the payment deadline for the Class 1A NICs payable by every employer and by some third-party providers of benefits to someone else's employees. The third-party payers of expenses and providers of benefits have a 6th of July 2008 deadline for notifying the recipient employees of the cash equivalent, the value, of the expense payment or benefit that they have received. Typically, this could be a manufacturer selling its products through a department store outlet, or a finance company providing hire purchase to sell cars, where someone else's employees are making the sales and are being provided with incentives and rewards for selling the third-party products. This is an onerous obligation imposed on employers, and one where penalties may be imposed and interest charged if the returns are submitted late and they're submitted inaccurately. The penalty for non-submission of P11Ds is an amount not exceeding £300 per P11D, which, if there's quite a number of employees, could add up to quite a lot, plus the potential of a continuing penalty of up to £60 per day. But that would only arise if the failure continued after the commissioners have awarded an initial penalty, which should never happen for us because we would have time to prepare the P11Ds or even agree with HMRC that they're not due. If the P11Ds that you submit are wrong, there is a maximum penalty of £3,000 per incorrect P11D, which again could add up to quite a lot of money if there were a lot of P11Ds. Although I have to say it's a fact that penalties are rarely charged by HMRC. The practice is for its employer compliance officers to invite the employer to volunteer to pay the underpaid income tax, in addition to the employer's statutory liability for any underpaid Class 1A National Insurance contributions. It's important to note that there's no legal obligation on any employer to pay the income tax liability of any director or employee. But also it's important to remember that where an employer agrees to meet that liability, it will be grossed up to pay the tax on the tax. And penalties, of course, will then not be charged on the income tax element of the settlement. £1,000 grossed up at 40% tax rate would go from £400 to £666.66. Employers are not liable to interest on the income tax liability of the director or employee, but interest and a penalty will be charged on any underpayment of Class 1A National Insurance contributions. The Class 1A NIC penalty for failure to submit Form P11D B is an initial fixed penalty of £100 per month, or part of a month, for every 50 employees, or part batch of 50 employees. This means a penalty of £100 per month for 1 to 50 employees, and by example, £200 per month for 51 to 60 employees. If then the failure continued beyond 12 months, an additional penalty up to a maximum of the Class 1A National Insurance contributions underpaid on the 19th of July will then be charged on top. But that penalty is subject to abatement. There is a lot of help and guidance from HMRC in addition to its CD-ROM. You can order the P11D guide from the order line. That's a four-page document, and that itself sets out the available guidance and provides some links to more help on the HMRC website. The booklet 480, Expenses and Benefits, a Tax Guide, is also very helpful, and any changes in that, because it's quite a document, are very easy to find just by looking for the green line on the left-hand side of the page. In addition, there are six P11D working sheets provided to help you calculate the cash equivalent of the benefit. And the working sheets that we've got are for living accommodation, car and fuel benefits, company van benefit, interest-free loans, relocation expenses and benefits, and the newest of them is the mileage allowance and passenger payments worksheet number 6. You've also got the HMRC booklet, the CWG5, which will help you decide whether an expense payment or benefit should go on the P11D and whether or not Class 1A applies or Class 1 NIC. Again, a useful booklet that I'll talk about a little bit more later on as well. Okay, so we agree that P11D reporting can be an onerous task, but today I'm more concerned to point out how important it is and who it affects. Our employer clients have to gather the required information and submit the P11D returns accurately and on time in order to be able to calculate and pay over the Class 1A National Insurance Contributions liability that arises. However, long before we reach the P11D and the P11DB submission date and the Class 1A NIC's deadline on the 19th of July, and then again before closing down the 2007-08 payroll, employers should be asking whether any of the blue box entries on the P11D will give rise to a Class 1 NIC's liability. You look at the P11D, we've got blue box entries, no NIC. We've got the brown box entries, which are for Class 1A. Perhaps one of the most obvious items, which is also covered on the P35 employer annual return, have a look at that question 5 of the checklist in part 3, is the making of a payment like school fees on behalf of an employee or more likely a director. Class 1 NICs are due and payable in the pay period in which the payment of the school fee is made. But if that has been overlooked and payment has not been made by the statutory payment date of the 19th of April 2008, it was the 22nd of April for electronic payment, an interest charge will have already arisen. This interest charge clock has already started running before most employers have begun looking at P11D preparation. We should also remember some other interested parties, notably those directors and employees, who will be anxiously awaiting their copy of the P11D to be able to submit their Self-Assessment Act returns to HMRC. Some of these people will be anxiously awaiting HMRC's receipt and response to their P11Ds to hopefully obtain a correct income tax code number and either a tax refund, or perhaps to know what the correct amount of tax they have to pay at the next payment date. So the message is first to make an early start, and at least make an initial assessment of any potential P11D entries where there may be a Class 1 NIC's liability from the blue boxes, as opposed to the brown box Class 1A. So how do we identify the expenses and benefits that attract Class 1A? The front page of the P11D highlights in brown writing, below the works number department box, that employers pay Class 1A National Insurance Contributions on most benefits. These are shown in boxes which are brown and have a Class 1A indicator. Sections B, payments made on behalf of the employee, C, vouchers or credit cards, E, mileage allowance and passenger payments, M, other items, and N, expense payments made to on behalf of the employee, are the blue boxes that do not attract Class 1A NICs, but might involve a missed Class 1 liability. Section M is the only dual choice section on the P11D, where we can choose Class 1A liability using the brown box option, or decide to put it in the blue box. Perhaps again, the most obvious example, as I mentioned just now, is the payment of school fees by the employer. Only if there's a contract between the employer and the supplier of the services, in other words, the school, should the relevant amount be entered in the brown box. In contrast, where the employer is merely paying the school fees on behalf of the director or the employee, the relevant amount should be entered in the blue box. A common error made by some employers is to assume that the reporting of such a payment on the P11D, where a specific box has been provided, is the end of the matter. But it isn't. And employers and their advisors need to recognise that the blue box entries potentially give rise to a Class 1 NIC's liability that might require a payroll adjustment. Another employer payment that might similarly be missed is private medical insurance. Perhaps where an employee has their own insurance and the employer reimburses that cost instead of providing a benefit from a company scheme. It is only appropriate to report it at Section I of the P11D if the contract is between the employer and the medical insurance company, as opposed to the reimbursement of the employee's pecuniary liability. CWG 5 booklet Appendix 1, Common Benefits, which I've mentioned already, provides useful guidance for employers completing P11Ds, identifying whether there's a Class 1 liability, Class 1 or 1A, whether there's any NICs liability at all, and importantly, where the expense payment or benefit should be entered on the form P11D itself. What about the P11D? Let's have a look at the changes to the 2007-08 form. The tax year is 2007-08, which seems a bit obvious, and all references have been changed to that. The note to the employer box at the top right of the page has been expanded, telling employers to send the completed form to your HMRC office by the 6th of July 2008. The note to employee box at the top right of the page has been expanded, telling employees that the box numberings are the same as on the employment page of the self-assessment tax return. For example, box 13. I'll cover them later on. The offending word sex has been changed to gender, where employers must note M for male or F for female under the date of birth box. Again, this is quite important in terms of tracing employees. So if we haven't got a national insurance number, we're putting down the gender, male or female, and we're putting down the date of birth. The employee name box has been split into two boxes. Again, I think because of the revenue needing to trace people more easily. So one box is for the surname and the other is for the forename, hopefully helping HMRC with tracing employees and removing confusion over forenames and surnames, particularly with number of foreign employees working in the UK and requiring P11Ds. The number boxes on the left of the cash equivalent boxes have changed to reflect the changes that have been made in the self-assessment main tax return. This really is quite important if an employer is submitting the 2007-08 P11Ds in a list or schedule format, because we do not want the returns rejected if the numbering isn't wrong and if it doesn't match. Changes to Section F, Car and Fuel Benefits. The explanatory text beneath dates car was available has been amended. This is a result of the problems that many employers had last year with incorrect tax code changes. We told, do not complete the from box if the car was available on the 5th of April 2007, or the to box if it continued to be available on 6th of April 2008. Completing those boxes where the car was available throughout the year apparently resulted in HMRC making assumptions that the car shown as available to the 5th of April ceased to be available from that end date, which is why they've given the revised guidelines. So no longer necessary. If the car's been available throughout the year, nothing to go in the from box, no 6th of April 2007 entry, nothing to go into the end box, no 5th of April 2008 entry. Just leave it blank. And if you've got a car that was changed during the year, just as an example, if someone had the old car was to the 11th of June 2007, so you put in from 6th of April to the 11th of June. The new car you would put in from the 11th or 12th of June, but you wouldn't put an end date if they continue to have the car into this current tax year. Another change to the P11D is a new box which has been included in Section G to record the company van fuel benefit where that is applicable. Where to start? Whoever is going to do this work will need a preparation timetable to ensure that the information is available in time to prepare and submit the P11Ds on time. The submission deadline is Sunday, 6th of July 2008. So let's work back from the last working day, Friday the 4th of July 2008, and then step back 2 weeks to allow time to give copies of the P11Ds to the directors and employees. I would give them all copies of their P11D information no later than Monday the 23rd of June and allow them to the end of the week to respond with any queries. How do you intend to submit the P11Ds? Well, HMRC's P11D guide states that you can complete and submit the returns online using PAYE Online for Employers, Internet or Electronic Data Interchange. It also says that you might find it easier and quicker to file online. Its website link, if you want to write this down, is www.hmrc.gov.uk/ebu/PAYE_online, www.htm. You'll soon find it if you go on the Revenue website anyway. You can also complete and print off the forms from HMRC's CD-ROM. It's the fill-in forms on screen section, or you can order paper forms P11D to complete manually and submit. My advice is always to have some spare copies for last-minute submission, so I order some paper copies or print them off the website, and remember that you can photocopy and submit blank forms as well. If you intend to use a third-party software, P11D software such as the PKF P11D software that I use, make sure that you have ordered and received the latest update before you start inputting the information. Try and find some time to test that software, even if you've used it before, just in case there have been changes made that might throw you into a panic if you're up against the wire doing the forms, or perhaps an amended form at the very last minute. Okay, next, what information do you need to complete the returns? My advice always is to look back to last year, see what was reported then. It's a fairly reliable method of avoiding egg on the face by missing something that was reported previously. Hopefully there will be a permanent P11D and or a tax file that will indicate what items have to be reported, and perhaps these items that can be excluded. This should include any items covered by a P11D dispensation, or where the liability is settled by the employer via a PAYE settlement agreement. Again, it's very important to know what you don't have to report. P11D dispensations and PSA information. Will you be able to find a copy of the P11D dispensation? And the other question is that still valid? On the subject of the validity of the dispensation, HMRC has, to my mind, been sending out some mixed and confusing messages to its customers recently. Last October 2007, in Employer Bulletin, issue number 27, under the heading Dispense with the Routine, HMRC said that we want to help you to reduce the amount of information that you need to report to us. Were you aware that in many circumstances, it's possible for an employer to be excused from reporting certain expenses or benefits in kind? That was a clear encouragement to consider applying for a P11D dispensation, which would ease the employer compliance burden. Then there's more, because in the next edition of the Employer Bulletin, issue number 28, which was issued in February this year, we are first told to watch out in April-May for a dispensation wizard that will tell you if you can apply for a dispensation. What a great idea. But in the same edition, under the heading of News on Dispensations, we're first told that where we are satisfied that there is no liability to income tax or NICs for certain expenses or benefits given to employees, a notice of dispensation can be given. Next, we're told that we will now consider revoking a dispensation retrospectively where there is any evidence of misrepresentation or negligence by an employer. So this is where we have HMRC saying that they might take away a dispensation that you thought applied to 2007-08, and you might submit the P11Ds on that basis. So what examples have they got? Well, first of all, when an application did not provide all the relevant information, or if there was a change in the way the expenses and benefits were made available to employees, meaning that the qualifying conditions were no longer met, and HMRC was not informed of the change. So are you sure that the dispensation is valid? This new warning must encourage us to review our existing dispensations and consider reapplying, if necessary, if there's any doubt about their validity. Reapplying before submitting the 2007-08 P11Ds. It's true to say that HMRC may be prepared to backdate a P11 dispensation to the start of the 2007-08 tax year if it can be demonstrated that the expense policy, the procedures applied throughout that year. If there is to be a 2007-08 PAYE settlement agreement in which the employer picks up the tax and NICs bill for any expense payments or benefits in kind that would otherwise be reported on a P11D, we need to check what items will be included in the PSA so that we can omit them from the P11D reporting. Again, there should be a permanent tax or P11D file to record important things such as the dispensation and such as the PSA items to be omitted from the P11Ds. There might be other important information such as an agreement with HMRC on the valuation of any particular benefits. If you don't have such a file, I recommend you set one up now to make life easier for the future. Also remember, I've mentioned already that PL11Ds can be submitted in list form, and if the only reportable benefit is something like medical insurance, it can be the simplest route to take. But you should agree the format of the PL11D list or schedule with your tax office when you first adopt this method of submission. Remember to have the right box entries on the schedule and have a look at paragraph 25.6 of the booklet 480 for more guidance on submission in list or schedule format. Who do you need to contact? The next item on my agenda is the source of the information that I will need to complete the PL11Ds. And now is the time to make early contact with the people that you rely on for the PL11D information that will be included on the PL11Ds. Pick up the telephone or send them an email or fax. Make sure that you give them sufficient time to be able to provide the information that you will need. It's helpful to give them a copy of the information that they provided last year, especially if it may be difficult to produce that information. It might give them a clue to where to look for it. Who then might we need to contact? My starting point would be the payroll department or perhaps an outside payroll bureau for details such as payments deducted from salary that will affect the PL11Ds. This might be repayment of loans in excess of the 5,000-day minimus limit. Personnel or human resources for details of any new benefits that may have been introduced and for information on issues such as employee relocations where the tax-free limit might have been exceeded. The finance or accounts department should be aware of the costs and might have information on expense payments to be reported. Is there a fleet manager or a leasing company that needs to be contacted because they will have to provide details of company cars and or company vans, company fuel changes? Do we have to find out list prices, CO2 emission details, this type of thing from the fleet manager or the leasing company? And finally, is there anyone else that you need information from in order to be able to complete your PL11Ds? Do you have to go back to the medical insurance provider to get details from them of the costs that you paid during the year? What about the reporting requirements? Well, employers must report all expenses and benefits provided to employees and directors or to members of their family or households. That is, by virtue of their employment. That means we also have to include costs met directly by the employer. Reporting is not restricted to amounts actually reimbursed to employees. So employers may have accounts with travel companies, with hotels, with restaurants, and those costs have to be reported on a PL11D if they've been incurred on behalf of an employer or director, unless the company has a PL11D dispensation to exclude such items. Who requires PL11Ds? Well, PL11Ds are required for all directors, excluding full-time working directors who have no material interest in the company, which is defined as 5% of the ordinary share capital. It also excluded directors of a charity or other non-profit-making organisation. And then for any employer director earning at a rate of £8,500 per annum. So the excluded directors will be very few and far between, because most directors who might be excluded are likely to earn more than £8,500 per year. Director includes any person in accordance with whose instructions the directors are accustomed to act. And then in calculating the £8,500 limit, you must include all salaries, bonuses, commissions, etc., and all expense payments and benefits in kind before deducting allowable expenses. Payments to an approved pension scheme and payroll-giving contributions can be excluded. Employers must provide each employee with a statement of the information shown on the PL11D by the 6th of July 2008. I've already talked about similar reporting requirement on third-party providers of benefits in kind. There's no set format for this information. It might be easy just to give them a copy of the PL11D, or it might be that a company memo is set out. As I say, there's no specific format. Anything that provides the necessary information will do, but it is a statutory requirement that must be met. Let's have a think about reporting exclusions. Employers do not have to complete nil PL11Ds, but employees have had no expenses paid or benefits provided. And as already explained, items included in a PL11D dispensation or items that the employer is settling in a PAYE settlement agreement should be excluded from the PL11D reporting. Also exclude any items in a taxed award scheme. The tax reward scheme is often used by third parties incentivizing other employees, and they'll pay the tax at the basic rate or the higher rate, and then they'll issue effectively a statement to the employees. But if you do have a tax reward scheme, or your client has a tax reward scheme, then the amounts included there shouldn't be reported on the P11D. It's very important to remember to tell the employees and the directors what items they don't have to put on their tax return. Otherwise, they could end up paying tax that's already been paid. Chapter 5 of the booklet 480 provides a lot more guidance on items to be excluded. It includes things like office accommodation, supplies or services. It talks about exempt job-related living accommodation, payments towards additional household costs of employees who work at home, and payments covered by extra salary concessions or exemptions. It goes into it in quite some detail, so again, it's worth a look at that when you start the work so that you can make a note of what items you don't have to put onto the P11D. Calculating the benefit, well, the general rule for P11D purposes is that the cash equivalent is the cost to the employer or other third-party provider. That's based on specific legislation applying to directors and to what we once knew as higher-paid employees. The £8,500 limit, which I have mentioned a couple of times, has remained at this level for many years, and the current consultation on payrolling benefits includes a consideration of abandoning that limit altogether. I'm afraid we'll wait and see on that. There are some exceptions to the general rules based on special legislation, and this includes live-in accommodation, vouchers, car and fuel benefit changes, and company vans. Remember that you should include details of any amount made good by the employee or from which income tax was deducted under pay as you earn. The taxable benefit to be included on the tax return should be restricted to the net cash equivalent. You may need to make a corresponding adjustment to the total benefits reported on Form P11DB if you enter an amount from which tax has been deducted under pay as you earn, where the benefit is liable to Class 1A NICs. Well, also remember the time scale for making good should be reasonably short, and at least by the time that the P11Ds are submitted. This was reinforced last year in the Impact Foiling Limited decision, which was in favour of HMRC and rejected an attempt by two directors to make good fuel benefits long after the end of the tax year. They actually repaid the full cost of all fuel that they had, but it was decided that they were too late in doing it and they were charged fuel scale charges. A more detailed review of calculating P11D expenses and benefits will be included in a separate podcast on calculating benefits, which is effectively part two of the 2007-08 P11D podcast for the AAT this year. Thank you very much.